You are listening to Business Day Spotlight.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and this is the Business Day Spotlight podcast. This is your weekly podcast for what's going on in and around the world of business in South Africa. So for today, we have quite an interesting show ahead. We're going to be, focusing a little bit around the business of agriculture and its intersection with technology, because, this is where we are in 2019, and on the line, we are joined by Caridas Chincholo, who is one of the founders of Kula Agriculture Technology, and they are a farming app. And I'm going to allow him to tell us a little bit around what the business does. But before we get into that, Caridas, how are you?
I'm good, man. How are you doing?
I'm all right. You will correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding of your business is that you've created a platform where you have a number of farmers in and around South Africa, and you match them up with buyers like fast food chains or some of the supermarket chains, and depending on the type of grade of produce that they're making or producing, that determines who some of their customers end up being. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yes, that's one part of what we do, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Cool. I think I'm just gonna, give you the stage, and you can just let us know what the business is, what it does, and what some of the other segments of the business are.
Okay, cool stuff. So Kula is essentially a marketplace at the core. So we initially set out to connect emerging farmers directly with former marketplaces. I hope you can hear me properly. But so at the core of it, we had the opportunity to take a trip to Israel with Investec. They've got a Young Trips program. And while we were there, we were quite blown away at the level of agricultural innovation that was happening in Israel. And we started questioning what the state of agriculture is in a South African context and in an African context. My business partner and I did actuarial science at UCT. He did business science. So we didn't really have much of an agricultural background, so to speak. But we came back and wanted to understand how a country like Israel, that is built basically on a desert, can have more agricultural outputs than countries in Africa. And we started doing some digging. We realized that actually Africa has 60% of the world's arable land. We discovered that more than half of the population actually consists of people who are completely dependent on small-scale agriculture for an income. And at the time, we also learned that Africa imports about $40 billion of food into the continent. So this, for us, didn't make a lot of sense. It kind of showed that there was a big inefficiency. And we didn't know necessarily in the beginning what problem we were going to solve within agriculture, but we kind of knew that there had to be some big inefficiency, because this is not making sense. We've got enough land to feed the world 10 times over, yet we're busy importing food. And we started sniffing around in South Africa and discovered that actually part of the reason why there's such huge inefficiencies, especially in the South African context, is that it's very difficult for emerging farmers to sell their product. Not only to sell their product, but to sell their product in bulk consistently. The only place that they can resort to is something called the fresh produce market. And South Africa has some of the biggest fresh produce markets in the world, right? And to wrap it up, when a farmer sells a bunch of spinach at the fresh produce market, for example, he will sell it for about 2.50 rand. Then another big company will go to the fresh produce market. If you go there at 3 a.m., it's so many big companies and big trucks that buy from there. They take the spinach under the M2 or on the M1. They deliver it to an office block across the road, and they sell the exact same spinach for 10 rand, right? And also, even on the 2.50 rand that the farmer gets, they have to pay a 7.5% fee to the market agent. They have to pay another seven and a half percent fee to the municipality. It gets even crazier. Because these agents are so big now, there are agents that link the farmer to the agent. So they have to pay a 2.5% fee to the agent that links them to the agent. And then over and above that, the stuff is not bought cash, it's bought on consignment. So it means just because your stuff is at the market, it doesn't mean that it's going to sell, or at the very least, it doesn't mean that it's going to sell today. And with fresh produce, spinach from yesterday and spinach from today are not the same price. So if it's a day old, the price keeps dropping. 2 days old, you get even less. So essentially, our thing was, these guys' product ends up in the formal marketplace anyway, so which debunks the whole myth that emerging farmers don't have quality product. So we could tell that these guys' product end up in the marketplace anyway. How about we find a way to connect them directly and bypass all these fees, even if they still get the same price that they would get at the market, but they're not paying all those high fees and they're not paying exorbitant logistics prices, which then puts money back into the pocket of the farmer. And that was the starting point for us, which then spiraled out into more problems that we came across as we were implementing the solution.
If I may just ask, because I like one of the things that you're talking about, just around how there were so many people being paid along this whole supply chain. At the end of the day, how much money is actually going towards an actual farmer of, let's say, using the price that you used in the beginning of 2.50, how much of that 2.50 actually gets kept by a farmer at the end of the day in a normal situation?
Very, very little. I mean, if we're looking at the fees, you're looking at about 20% towards the fees. And because these guys are not as big as the commercial farmers, they usually don't have the benefit of economies of scale on the logistics as well. So you find that they pay about 20 to 30% towards logistics. So you find that, okay, in total, they end up paying about 40 to 45% just to make the trade go through. Mm. But now the other problem is that the stuff is on consignment. So it might not be 40% of even the 2.50 or the 3 rand that you get at the market, because your stuff might be sold the next day. So it means now you're going to get half price than what you would have gotten, and now you're losing 40% on that. And this doesn't only apply to the emerging farmers. Even the commercial farmers are not happy with the current system and the way things are done.
Yeah.
Because all these guys that sit in the middle are kind of basically taking huge chunks of the pie.
Yeah.
And that's why even now, we're launching properly fully next year. We're currently trading now, but we're kind of trading in a pilot. So we've selected a core group of emerging farmers, a core group of commercial farmers, and even the commercial farmers are experiencing the exact same problem. And we're saying, the client wants your stuff, you have the stuff, there's no reason why the two of you shouldn't be able to trade directly.
And how many farmers do you guys actually have on the platform between the two types that you're talking about, that small-scale farmer and the commercial farmers? How many do you have on the platform at the moment for the pilot?
Cool. So initially, our initial business approach was mainly towards the emerging farmer. So our focus when we started was mainly towards the emerging farmer. And then we took a trip to Germany last year, and we met with a whole lot of venture capital funds and a whole lot of agri funds within Germany. And they kept asking us a simple question, like, why aren't you doing this for commercial farmers as well? You know? And one of the issues in South Africa is that almost as a business person, you don't realize your own biases, because we had a big thing of save the commercial farmer, help the black farmer, which is a very noble cause. But actually, if our solution didn't cater for the commercial farmers, then another competitor could have easily done that, while we were trying to be only just a social enterprise, if you will. So that trip to Germany.
Oh, I see. So you decided to go for the whole market instead boxing yourselves off into that corner of the market.
So when we came back, we were like, okay, let's pick a few commercial farmers and let's see what their problems are so we can integrate them into the system as well. But the bulk of the farmers we have are emerging farmers. We've got about 3,000 farmers on the platform. in terms of on the emerging side. Then on the commercial side, we've got about 150. But remember, it's still a locked pilot. So going into next year, we're going full blast. But we want to make sure that when we go to market, we're going in there with a product that's been tried and tested. So our pilot has been running for about 2 years. And the pilot has been so successful that even though we hadn't launched, we even won the MTN Business App of the Year in South Africa. So we are officially the best app in the country, even pre-launch. And this is because of the social impact that the business is having. And at the same time, the commercial impact, because a lot of startups or a lot of new age businesses kind of push in efficiencies at the expense of jobs. But in our case, we found that actually the more we grow, the more employment we create, because the big thing for us is helping the farmer scale. And one of the big issues, especially with the emerging guys, you find that a guy inherits 300 hectares of land, but he only plants on 10 hectares because he doesn't know where he's going to sell his stuff, and it's too risky. So when we come in and say, hey, client X wants you to plant 30 hectares of tomatoes for them, and they're going to buy them up front. And then that way, this guy has almost quadrupled his business just with one offtake agreement, and that has huge implications for employment and a whole lot of other issues.
Actually, you know, on that, I want to come back to the fact that you guys are in this sort of two-year pre-launch sort of pilot phase. How has the interest been? You spoke about meeting with venture capitalists and the like. Well, how has that interest been on the funding side? I actually got introduced to your business a few weeks ago when you won that the Africa Arena Joburg event, where you won that pitching competition, and I was like, okay, that's a very interesting business. But I wanted to perhaps get a sense of, you know, how much have you guys been able to raise along the way, if you're comfortable to share those
details. I'll give you a sneak peek. But I think that's the funding issue needs its own interview. raising funding in South Africa is quite a difficult experience, especially for a tech startup, because I think the funding community does not understand how tech startups work. I think you've got a very traditional, almost private equity type of investment firms who, when you go to funding for them, they'll ask you, how many trucks do you have? But you're like, the point is not to own trucks. They'll ask you, how many people do you employ? As though it's something great, you know, to have a huge salary bill. Whereas with the tech startup, we're trying to go as lean as possible. And once you jump that hurdle, you now get into the hurdle of equity, where a funder will say, no, cool, we have the money, we'll give you the money, but we want 40% or we want 51%, which would never make sense for any startup founder. You can't have the same level of commitment, especially if it's a seed round investment, because at the seed round, you don't know what your business is even worth, you know? So I think a lot of VCs or a lot of funders in South Africa still need to be educated about the funding of early stage startups, and that for the most part, it's a gut feel, is that you feel that these guys have proven a hypothesis, and let's see with the seed funding if they can get to a certain level with that funding. In our case, we had a lot of doors shut in our face, and we had to turn down about 3 or 4 South African deals for the reasons that I've mentioned. Yeah. And when we went to Germany, another big flop that you find in South Africa is that they make you dance around a lot. So if you go to someone who's willing to fund, they're going to say, come in and pitch. And you come in and you pitch. Wow, that's amazing. We're going to talk to so-and-so in finance. Then they come back again. And you're coming back. 4 months later, they reject you. And all of the time and resource spent going to that client is quite expensive.
You could have been doing something better.
Exactly. Whereas in Germany, we literally walked in. They say, my man, we don't like it. Why are you not doing commercial farmers? Please, you can go away. Or then you know that, okay, these guys don't want to invest in my thing because of reason X and reason Y. Then you go back and you're like, actually, why are we not doing commercial farmers? You redo the model, you go back again. So I think even the feedback is quite a big hurdle. But in our case, we actually used an interesting funding model where we realized early this year that the data that we have on our platform, which is quite rigorous on each and every individual farmer, is quite valuable to banks, quite valuable to financial services companies, quite valuable to anyone in the ecosystem. And we structured a deal with the land bank, and they paid us quite a bit of money just to access some of the data on our platform. And we realized that, okay, we want to raise a minimum of about 7 million for our seed round. If we can find other companies that have an appetite for this data, maybe we can raise the amount without even having to give away equity. And that's exactly what we did. So we've got one of the big banks. The announcement will be going live in about a month or so all over the country. But we've signed with one of the big banks where they're basically paying us even more than what we're looking to raise, just so they could be our banking partner, because we were launching a wallet on the system. So the funding model that we used was quite interesting. And then we've also managed to get E-Squared, which is a VC on board. And even them coming on board, it's so that when we need to raise again, we're not doing this whole thing of hopping around and basically dancing around for investors. That's how we've managed to raise our initial seed round. And then we'll probably be looking at raising a Series A in about 12 to 18 months once we launch full scale in January.
Okay, cool. So if I'm just understanding what you're saying correctly, then it means it wasn't funding per se. It's that you were able to actually create an offshoot product, which is actually helping, which are then selling off and then helping to actually grow the business.
Yes, yes. So here's the other thing that I don't like about the SA business market, right? I think problem number one, right, is that we don't have the right examples for upcoming entrepreneurs, which is part of the reason why high-tech, high-innovation startups are on the back burner.
Yeah.
Because if you look at the guys who are so-called rich people in South Africa, you've got your Patrice Motsepe's, your Cyril Ramaphosa's. These are guys who've done very well for themselves, all due respect to them. But also at the same time, these are guys that you could say were almost at the right place at the right time. Because a lot of their wealth is linked to BEE deals. It's linked to a lot of post-94 deals, right?
Yeah.
The problem with guys like that is that you can't mass produce them. If I'm a kid in a township and I'm looking to be just as rich as those guys, how am I also going to structure a BEE deal? Or am I also going to structure, you know, it's very difficult because the only way you can mass produce those guys is if we redo apartheid every 5 years. We just redo it and then everyone knows that, okay, now I can best position myself to get a BEE deal. Whereas what we need for the youth is almost like what they have in Silicon Valley. Because you can say, okay, here's Mark Zuckerberg. He saw a connectivity problem. He sat down and solved that connectivity problem, piloted it at Harvard, added Yale, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Here's Jeff Bezos. He saw an e-commerce problem, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I think that's kind of the element I think that's missing from South Africa, is that the bulk of the rich people are from different generations where things were done differently, and they're very hard to replicate. So what you find that everyone emphasizes so heavily on a business plan. It's like, you start a business, you need a business plan, and you need to draft this long document where you basically build castles in the air, and you're going to take that document and you're going to give it to the IDC and hope for money. Whereas for me, it should be about solving a real problem that's facing South Africa, that's facing the continent as a whole, and improve some kind of hypothesis. And once you've proven the hypothesis, it's not as hard to be able to raise funding. To say, okay, there's a problem with farmers. Let's find 10 farmers, let's find 2 clients, and let's build some sort of prototype and get these guys moving. Then when you go for funding, it's not based off a business plan where you build castles in the air. It's based on some sort of hypothesis to say, we think this thing worked at this scale. We think it can even work at a larger scale. So, yeah, and also we're taught to emphasize too much on funding. It's like, I have a business idea, now I need funding. And for me, that's part of the reason why we hold back, you know. Sometimes you just need to prove your hypothesis at a certain scale, and then once you're there, it becomes much easier to be able to raise something. But we're used to traditional, I'm going to run a construction company, I'm going to run an engineer, you know what I mean, like almost very... Basically, we're going into competitive spaces where we're replicating companies that are already existing. And a good example of this was part of what was being done with the Black Industrialist Program, where it was very much, we want to create the next PwC. We want to create a black What's the other one? Yeah, a black Marian Roberts, a black this. But actually, the world economy, those companies might even be obsolete in the future, whereas we're supposed to be saying, let's create the first black-owned what. Let's create. Anyway, I'm talking too much, sorry. I'm getting carried away.
No, I totally understand. But as we come to a close, I think this is a business that's actually going to be quite interesting to look at in the future. I'm definitely looking forward to see what the funding rounds will be looking like in the next 12 to 18 months, as you said, and the announcement of the big bank that you guys now have on board. But more importantly, when the launch actually happens, what type of scale you'd have reached by then, because as you said, you guys are already trading. So for our listeners, and you never know, there might be someone who wants to get into business with you who's listening. How can people, perhaps get in touch, or how can people who might be in agriculture already actually perhaps get into business with you guys?
Okay, cool. So they can either contact us through our social media. So on Twitter, it's at Cooler App. On Instagram, it's at Cooler_App. On Facebook, it's Cooler. And then if they want to get in touch with me directly, my email is my name and the first letter of my surname. So caridast@cooler.co.za, caridast@cooler.co.za. And I think we're always looking as well to partner as far as possible. I think we've realized that in agriculture, you can't solve problems in isolation. Like, we set out to solve a market problem just with the trading, but we realize that now there's a funding problem and we've had to get into that funding problem. We've realized that there's a logistics problem and we've had to get into that logistics problem. So I think anyone in the space who is willing to engage, to help us get to where we need to, we're very open and we understand very much where our strengths lie and where our weaknesses lie. So hence we've roped in some banks, we've roped in some input suppliers. We're just closing a deal now with one of the biggest logistics company, SA. And we understand that there's no way we're going to solve this thing by ourselves. We're going to need to pull in basically every stakeholder that we can.
Okay, cool. So that's been us on the line with Caridas Chincholo, who is one of the founders of Cooler. That's Cooler Agriculture Technology. They are a marketplace matching farmers, commercial and emerging, to wholesale and other type of customers that want agricultural produce. He's telling us the fact that funding is a big problem for tech startups in South Africa, and also the fact that they identified a problem in agriculture with more than 60% of the world's arable land. It's quite shocking how much food is actually being imported onto the continent, and that's one of the problems that they are seeking to actually solve. And he's also talking about the fact that with each problem that they encounter, they find themselves having to tackle that problem and actually find new and exciting solutions. They are partnering with one of the biggest logistics companies in South Africa, one of the biggest banks in South Africa. So it's going to be an exciting space to look out. So thank you so much to him for being on the show. Remember that you can find our latest podcast of the Business Day Spotlight podcast on Business Life. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab. And then on Twitter, we're at hashtag BD Spotlight. And then remember that you can subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you so much to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza, and remember that the Business Day Spotlight is a multimedia live production. So myself and the rest of the team, is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.